supplement is Doctors Nursing Rehabilitation Center versus Sebelius. Mr. Rosenthal.
Good morning. Ari Rosenthal for the appellant. This case, as you've seen from the briefs, is actually quite unusual in the sense that I stand here before you arguing that as a plaintiff, that I believe the defendant, or at least the agents of the defendants, were correct in the actions that they took at the administrative level, whereas the defendant is arguing that her own agents were wrong. And by that, I mean it's very clear from the contractor's decision when there was a request for a redetermination in these claims, and then when there was the reconsideration by the qualified independent contractor, that they both found that this was not an issue that is subject to an initial determination or is subject to an administrative review. And that kind of gets to the heart of this case. While there's a lot of cases being cited by the Secretary in her briefs about the discretion of the Secretary and obviously the long line of Supreme Court cases on these issues, none of them deal with this situation where you have an issue, and even the Sixth Circuit decision didn't deal with a situation where the issue is something that's not subject to an initial determination, and that's really what we have here. So there's really two avenues that this court can go. One is to say that the whole argument is really moot as far as whether or not the Secretary has a right to reopen once the court properly has jurisdiction. And again, I don't think there's any issue that the district court at the time of the filing had jurisdiction. There's no question as to that. It's only subsequent to that can the Secretary reopen. And I would submit that I don't think this court has to even go there because this issue, the issue of inherent reasonableness and the use of that adjustments is not something subject.
Are you opposed to the reopening?
Yes. We're opposed because we don't believe they have a right to reopen. They have a right under the statute, which Congress set forth, to say that if you believe...
I guess I'm not understanding what you're saying. I thought the argument was whether the district court had lost jurisdiction.
Correct.
The issue?
Well, correct, Judge, and I'm saying...
What does that have to do with what you're talking about?
What I'm saying, Judge, is that there's really... In a sense, and we've set this forth in the brief, that and the district court didn't even address the issue. The preliminary issue is whether or not there is a matter subject to administrative review. If there isn't, then the secretary doesn't have a right to reopen because there isn't anything to reopen.
But
well,
Mr.
The first
Rosenthal,
issue is jurisdictional.
You're saying it is jurisdictional, Judge. Alternatively,
have to address the issue whether there is subject matter jurisdiction here.
Subject matter, Judge. I don't think there's any question that there's subject matter jurisdiction. If you're saying that it's a question of whether or not you can proceed under 1331,
I thought the issue was whether there was a final judgment that was appealable to us, isn't that? Whether we have jurisdiction over...
That is one of the issues. I guess what I'm saying, Judge, I think...
Don't we have to consider our jurisdiction first?
Correct. And I think...
Could you address
response
that?
To that, Judge,
what
I think...
What is your argument?
I think it's very clear, Judge. There was a final decision. If you construe that there was a requirement to channel to begin with through the administrative agency, which was done here... There's no question, as I said in the very beginning, that the Secretary's agents, which is the contractor here and the qualified independent contractor, all found that there was nothing further they can do and dismissed this. No further appeal. And so from that standpoint, yes, Judge, I'm saying that as the alternative, what we've set forth in the complaint that we filed was that there was a final decision.
You're saying that they, in effect... By reopening, I guess the court concluded they stripped it of jurisdiction.
Correct.
You're saying it did not. The district court had jurisdiction, therefore they couldn't reopen a case they no longer had control of. And what you're appealing here is, I guess, the dismissal, right?
Correct, Judge.
And you want it sent back, I assume, so that the court can then maybe make a decision on its own whether or not to remand it from there.
That's correct.
But the court would have control of the case.
To the extent the secretary would still have that right, yes. Then the court then would make that decision.
But the district court decide that.
Correct. And that is certainly the issue.
So what exactly is being argued over? Can't the district court stay its case to give the secretary a chance to reopen?
District court has the discretion under 405, which is incorporated by the Medicare Act, to do that if requested by the secretary. Only upon a showing.
The secretary is going to request it because she wants to reopen this.
Well, right? Then it gets down to a question of.
What's the point of this proceeding? I don't understand.
Judges, you have to have good cause.
There's going to be a reopening regardless, right?
Well, I don't know that question, the answer to that, Judge. I would be, at least our position would be to argue that no, there should not be a reopening. And the reason for that, Judge, is 405 limits a reopening. The secretary just can't come in and say, I want to reopen. It has to be good cause as defined in the statute.
Ms. Rosenthal, I have the impression you're shooting at a white flag here. The secretary has, in response to this lawsuit, said we want to take another look at this issue. Why are you opposed to that?
Because
as a practical matter.
As a practical matter, and I don't know that it's relevant to the issues of jurisdiction, but as a practical matter, because the secretary, or at least her agents, have no authority to deal with this issue. They've already stated that. This issue concerns, under the CFR, the only matters which are not subject to an initial determination, in other words, not subject to administrative review.
The secretary is saying that she does have authority to take another look at this issue, whether the QIC does or not. So you want somebody to fix the problem here. Why do you care so strongly whether it's done through an administrative process or done in the Central District of Illinois?
Because the secretary hasn't admitted that. The secretary has taken the request in the administrative proceeding and twisted that to say that, oh, there might be a underpayment here. So to that extent, I'll send it back. The secretary has not said that she would revisit the issue of the computation of the fee schedule or the use of inherent reasonableness.
What other underpayment is there?
There isn't an underpayment. That's our position.
Only issue is whether the changes in these schedules were justified, right? That's on the merits.
Correct.
So if the secretary wants to take another look at it, what's the problem with that?
Because the secretary isn't taking another look at that. The only issue they're going to look at is whether there's an underpayment. There isn't an underpayment. I mean, this is ridiculous to even say there's an underpayment. An underpayment is if the schedule said $5 and they paid $4, then you've been underpaid. This isn't a question of that. This is a question that goes to the heart of the computation of the fee schedule and whether or not they used inherent reasonableness improperly. That's a matter. It's not subject to administrative review. And the secretary has not said she would revisit that issue. That is not what they're doing by proposing to go to a reopening. And even if she were, you're still subject to a standard under 405 of whether or not there's good cause. And I guess from a practical standpoint, again, I would say it's not necessarily relevant to this, but you're asking me, my client doesn't want to waste another 2 years in administrative review when it's very clear that this matter is not subject to administrative review. And there's no basis for reopening.
Does the district court have jurisdiction in this case to just order the secretary to pay your client money? Or would the remedy be another remand?
The remedy, at least we seek, is a declaration that they used the wrong fee schedule or reset this. Remember, the facts here are that this particular claim was put on a no-fee schedule, and then they put it back and set it on a fee schedule. And our argument is that they, in effect, by doing that, violated the.
So does the district court have the authority to order the secretary to pay your client money or just remand the matter?
I would think the court does have the authority, at least in my opinion, to order.
Where does it come from?
The same as is the, I think it would come probably in that sense from a traditional 1331. I mean, it's not coming under
That's excluded, though, by the statutes, isn't it?
No, it's not excluded. I mean, Illinois Council makes clear that to the extent there is not a mechanism for review in the administrative process, that you still have the ability for judicial review, and that's in effect what we've done.
What would happen if the secretary didn't move to reopen?
if she didn't allow, if the secretary didn't move to reopen, the case would proceed on its merits.
And when in proceeding on the merits, what could happen?
Well, what we would request and have requested in our complaint is for a declaratory judgment that, in fact, the secretary violated the law in adjusting the schedule and setting the schedule back at the rate that it should have been based on the 1999 figures.
Mr. Rosenthal.
What you're saying is that the secretary should have petitioned the court to say that they would like to reopen.
Well, I'm saying that's the mechanism.
The district court would have to allow them to do that, wouldn't it?
Well, no, it wouldn't. Because that's I think, what Judge Posner had asked, and I think the question is, would it be automatic? No, they have to show, under 405, they have to show good cause. Good cause is defined as
the secretary does.
The secretary would have to show good cause.
To whom?
To the district court.
Right.
And I'm saying I don't know that in this.
Have you known
factual
district courts to resist those motions?
Well,
I never have seen that.
From a practical standpoint, you may be right that the court may end up saying, I'm going to allow you to reopen it. But I guess I'm submitting that based on the standard of good cause as defined and the fact that there is no initial review here at all.
If I could just ask one last question about it. Was there some kind of dramatic technological change here? The change in fee schedules here is dramatic. And it certainly looks like Medicare thought that they found some real windfall profits being made.
Well, obviously, if so, it would be probably outside the record. But I'm not aware of any dramatic change with respect to this. I think, again, we had the error that it was on the no-fee list, and there was confusion here because this was a fee. You know, you've got different fee schedules. You have for physicians, for nursing homes, and for therapy that we've mentioned. I think by chance, when this thing was corrected to say it should be paid, they just put it at whatever level they were paying for physician services, not addressing the issue that they were precluded from changing it as to all others.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Rosenthal. Mr. Waldman?
May it please the Court, my name is Joshua Waldman, here from the United States Department of Justice, representing the Secretary in this case.
I'm puzzled by your argument. You say on page 11 of your brief that after the QIC affirmed dismissal request, notify the plaintiffs that dismissal is final and not subject to any further review. So, of course, the plaintiff sued. Well, if it's final and not subject to any further review, why isn't it a final decision and district court has jurisdiction? And after the fact that it can be reopened later, why would that make any difference?
Well, I think
always got, reconsideration provisions. I mean, it's like saying, well, if a district court issues a final judgment and then a month later it says, a Rule 60B motion has been filed. I think I want to reexamine my motion. We don't dismiss the appeal. On the contrary, we say the district court has no further jurisdiction. Right?
Well, I think
we'll ask the district judge if he wants to consider it, and then we'll have a limited remand for that purpose. But we never lose jurisdiction. So why would we lose it here?
Well,
why would the district court lose it here?
The jurisdictional statute does require a final decision of the secretary, and I understand what you're quoting from the QIC, but our position here, and it's the secretary's position, is that statement was made in obvious error. And what we're dealing with are...
I don't understand that. I mean, I understand exhaustion of administrative remedies, but I don't understand reopening as a form of exhaustion. Is that what you're saying? That somehow, even after you have the affirmance by the QIC of the dismissal and so on, even after that, you just can't sue until the secretary decides whether to reopen the case? That's reopening. Reopening sounds like something's closed. That is final. Now it's going to be reopened. That's what it sounds like. And you just treat it as ordinary, exhaustion.
Well, I think what we're saying is if a QIC, who is a contractor for an insurance company who reviews thousands of claims a year, makes a mistake in thinking that there are no further administrative proceedings, when in fact it subsequently becomes clear that there are, there is not some sort of ironclad jurisdictional rule where a district court has to throw up his hands and say, well, the error wasn't discovered until after a complaint was filed.
I don't know what you're talking about with ironclad jurisdictional rule. Is that a final determination? That can you file suit in district court at that point? Or do you have to wait until you've asked for, you know, the secretary to reopen?
You don't have to ask the secretary to reopen, but the plaintiff's argument here is...
Well, if you don't have to ask the secretary to reopen, then it's not an exhaustion case. You go directly into district court. You have a final decision.
No, Your Honor, it's no different, I think, or it's very analogous to the situation in Gao.
No, I don't think so. That's a mootness case. That initial challenge became moot. It was a challenge to a failure to reopen. Then the immigration court reopened, right? So that first appeal became moot.
Well,
that's not like this case.
Well, it's at a minimum, it's like Bison in the Sixth Circuit, which dealt
with... Now you're going to another case. I mean, Gao was your big case. Look,
well,
I don't understand the point of it. If you have a final decision, you go into court. Now then if there's some reopening or this or that or the other thing or someone wants to reopen, you say to the judge, all right, stay the case. If you think we should go back and, you know, get the view of the secretary, fine. Then you have a stay. That's how you handle these things. Otherwise, people aren't...
If Your Honor...
Was there a deadline in which he had to file a suit?
I don't think it was that he rushed in to file a deadline. He filed a short 2 months after.
No. What is the deadline when the QIC affirms something or issues a ruling? How long do you have to file suit in district court?
I don't know the answer to that.
Well, that's kind of important, isn't it? Do you have forever?
You don't have forever, Your Honor. I'm sure of that.
You might have to file, even though there'd been no reopening.
I don't think that there's any question.
Well, if you have to file, if it's a final decision, the district court has jurisdiction. Now, why should it lose jurisdiction because of a reopening when the simple way to handle it is just stay the case while the further administrative proceedings go on?
If I may answer, Your Honor, if you want to say that the proper course here would have been to do that, we will not object to it. We think that the important thing is that it go back through the administrative...
No, I understand. I just don't see why the way to deal with the issue is to have a dismissal and then a new case instituted, a new complaint, a new fee paid, and then maybe it doesn't go back to the judge because there's some slip-up. I mean, it seems to me be much easier to judge hold on to the case, remand it, and...
The only
have to worry about filing another suit.
But as I said, we don't necessarily object to that. But I think the antecedent question you'd have to answer is, in the hypothetical you're positing, the district court would retain jurisdiction. So you still have to answer the question of, if the case is reopened, does that mean there is no longer a final, quote, final decision of the secretary over which the district court can retain jurisdiction? And the answer to that question that the plaintiffs posit is the time of filing rule. And our argument is that there is no ironclad time of filing rule that says jurisdiction for the district court is determined only with reference to the time that you file, and the hands of the court are tied with respect to reopenings that occur after the complaint is filed.
Suppose the issue goes before the district court. You litigate it there. You don't like the result. You file an appeal, and at the same time, you reopen the proceeding. Would you argue at that point then, well, we ought to vacate the judgment of the district court that you don't like so you can try again? In other words, can you try this tactic at any stage in the litigation process?
Our argument does not go that far. We're just saying that there are practical and policy considerations that courts look to for exceptions to the time
of filing. With your jurisdictional argument here, doesn't the argument reach that far?
Well, not necessarily, because
after a tough oral argument in front of the Supreme Court, you could move to dismiss because we've reopened the proceeding.
Again, we're not saying that the argument has to go that far. If you look at cases like Newman Green and Caterpillar versus Lewis in the Supreme Court, they say you look to practical considerations to see whether you would dismiss or not. If there's been a whole trial based, for example, on complete diversity, and it turns out after the fact that there was a mistake, you don't just wipe out the judgment.
Now it's becoming really messy. Now, no one would know whether the court had jurisdiction or not. You can look at all these different factors.
Well, all we're saying is when we do come in and reopen, in this particular case, where you're dealing with all that happened was a filing.
Look, that's not a good argument for jurisdiction. Saying, well, in this particular case, yeah, well, there's no jurisdiction. In another case where we reopen later, maybe the district court would retain jurisdiction. Maybe we should be a stop to deny. It just gets so messy.
Well, I mean, first of all, that's the answer that the Supreme Court gives in cases like Caterpillar. You look to practical considerations. And our the other argument that we would make, Your Honor, is
What does that case have to do with this case?
All we're saying is when you figure out, here's what the connection is, if I may explain. The jurisdictional question is either determined solely with reference to what existed at the time the complaint was filed, or it's not. And there are exceptions to the rule that says you only look to the time of filing. And they take into consideration the practical, real-world consequences.
There are no consequences. Zero consequences, as you admitted when you said you'd be perfectly fine with my suggested approach.
Well, no, Your Honor.
It solves the whole issue.
All we're saying is that if the approach is that the district court doesn't lose jurisdiction and it has to litigate the merits of the case, that's what we're arguing against.
Look, it certainly doesn't have to go plowing ahead when the secretary wants to reopen, right? I mean, this is like primary jurisdiction. You have a suit, and there's some issue which is important to an agency, and the district court grants a stay, so you go to the agency. Maybe that'll resolve the whole proceeding there. And if it does, then you drop the district court proceeding. That's the way these things are always handled.
Your Honor, I'm getting the sense.
To get into jurisdiction makes it just such a mess.
Well, Your Honor, if I may answer, I think that we're arguing over procedural niceties, and I understand that those are important.
Your procedural niceties are just a mess because you start dismissing cases, then they come back. They're filed. Maybe they don't get, you know, often you have a problem in the district court that they don't get back to the original judge. Then people start arguing statute of limitations. They say, oh, no, this is a brand new suit. We have to consider whether it might be barred by the statute of limitations.
Well, I don't think the statute of limitations would be a problem because there's a new final decision from the secretary at the end of the administrative process. And as for whether it gets reassigned to the same judge or not, obviously we're not in control of that. But our point is just this. The district court rules.
Tell me, is there any respect in which your procedure, this jurisdictional procedure, is superior to what I suggested, which is just the judge retains jurisdiction because he had it's a district court appeal from a final administrative decision. And then if there's a reopening, he can always stay his proceeding for the reopening.
Your Honor, I think, as I was trying to say before, ultimately what we think the paramount thing of importance here is that the agency...
That's not my question. My question is there any respect in which your approach, the approach you're defending, is superior to the approach I suggested?
Yes, and it's this, Your Honor. Your approach assumes the jurisdiction, that the district court properly had jurisdiction over the QIC's affirmance of the dismissal. And it's not necessarily a correct interpretation of the jurisdictional statute.
You're not responding to my question.
I think that I am, Your Honor.
Is there some practical superiority that your approach has?
No, it's not a practical superiority. It's a matter of a question of law. I'd be happy to explain it to you, Your Honor. Your approach says that the district court sends it back to the agency while retaining jurisdiction, if I understand your approach correctly. And there are two legal questions there. One is whether posed by the plaintiff, whether the district court has any authority to order a remand. I mean, I suppose you're thinking about a remand. So there's a Section 504G question.
Of course
question
it does. And of course it has that
okay.
authority.
That's fine. And they argue the opposite, but that's fine. We're willing to. And then the second question is that your approach posits that the district court correctly had jurisdiction. And I think you'd have to answer the question of if there was a correct dismissal by the affirmance by the QIC, is that something subject to jurisdiction under 1395 FF? And that is not I don't think you need to answer that question in this case, and it's not clear what the answer to that question is.
I thought your position was the district court had jurisdiction when the suit was filed. It just lost it later when the secretary decided to reopen the case.
Our position is it certainly appeared that there was jurisdiction at the time based on what the QIC said.
But I don't understand. If there hadn't been any movement to reopen, there wouldn't have been any problem with jurisdiction.
Well, I think that's just saying if the error had never been discovered, everyone would assume that there was no error.
She doesn't reopen in every case, surely.
No, she doesn't. It's the rare thing. But the point is, if this, for example, if the QIC letter...
Rare thing. I don't understand you. If you challenge the QIC's decision and there's no request to reopen, does the district court have jurisdiction?
Yes.
When does that jurisdiction attach?
Well, it attaches when the complaint... Well, in this case,
when in general does jurisdiction attach?
Usually you answer that question at the time of the filing of the complaint as a presumptive rule, but you're not bound by that in every single case.
That's murky. So you have presumptive jurisdiction until the secretary decides not to reopen, and then it becomes real jurisdiction?
Well, it's just like if you, for example, have a diversity case and everyone thinks that there's complete diversity, the district court has jurisdiction at that time, but then if it becomes clear that there was a misunderstanding, someone is domiciled in a state that it wasn't clear at the time of filing.
Right, but what's so strange is the notion that a reconsideration by the lower court or the agency in this case would somehow affect jurisdiction. But anyway, we understand your argument.
I think bottom line, Your Honor, if you want to take that procedure, we're not pushing against you. We think that the paramount important thing here is that the available administrative remedies be taken to completion. And however we get there, we would be happy with it.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Waldman. So, Mr. Rosenthal, I'll give you another minute.
Thank you. I just actually wanted to respond to questions that counsel could not. There is a deadline for filing. It's a 60-day under the statute. So we had 60 days to file suit, and which is what we did, and which is why this was the final decision that we filed. The second thing I just wanted to mention, and I know a question had been asked as far as from a practical standpoint, there is a potential statute of limitations issue, you raised the point about if we have to refile. They've raised it in their briefs in the underlying with the district court. They've hinted in a footnote that to the extent we're claiming that these were matters that from January of 2000, that there may be a statute of limitations time period that we should have filed. We've argued that, again, through footnotes, that there may be tolling that may be applicable. But the bottom line is, yes, we could be prejudiced to the extent that a holding would be affirmed, or the district court's decision would be affirmed, saying that there is no jurisdiction, because now we're going to be precluded for probably another, at least a year, if not 2 years, dealing with administrative remedies that we can't address. And that's, I just want to make sure everyone understands this.
If the relevant time was in 2000, there's not going to be nothing here is going to make any difference about that, is it?
Well,
you would have been barred in 2006, and you'll be barred in 2010.
There's arguments that every year when they made adjustments that you'd, again, have a new statute of limitations, at least as to those adjustments. Because if you look in the complaint that we filed, there were adjustments made every year, or at least almost every year, exceeding the 15% threshold. And, of course, there's tolling issues. Is when did we first know we can actually even assert that we were entitled to reimbursement? And that's why we raised in the complaint the fact that it had been on a no-pay list for several years, which they admitted was improper.
Well, we'll have to end here, Mr. Rosenthal.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you to both counsel. Last case.